Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey folks, this is Kevin. Just a few words before we start. You know, the people we work with the most aren't always the people we see every day. You probably have clients and coworkers around the globe, and to work efficiently, you need a stronger connection. That's why we use GoToMeeting with HD Faces. Simple way to meet online and see everyone face-to-face. With GoToMeeting by Citrix, you share the same screen to collaborate in real time. You just turn on your webcam. Feels like you're in the same room. You can launch a meeting from anywhere using a computer, smartphone, tablet, or an iPad. We love it. So try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. For this special offer, visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code RISK. Remember, that's GoToMeeting.com. Use the promo code RISK. Also, as you know, small businesses can come in any shape or size these days. But even if you work in a traditional office, I am here to inform you that you can do all your mailing and shipping right now from your own computer and printer. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service. You can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package. They'll send you a digital scale, help you decide the best class of mail based on your needs. We use Stamps.com and we love it. Right now, you can use our promo code RISK for this special offer. It's a no-risk trial, plus a $110 bonus offer, including the digital scale and up to $55 free postage. So don't wait. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in RISK. That's Stamps.com. Enter RISK. Now here's the show. Kids, this is RISK, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and this is Giraffage behind me now. Or Giraffe Age? I don't know. I don't know from these kids and their animal referencing band names. But they sound terrific, and it's the start of a terrific show. This is live from Charleston 2. The second time we've been to the absolutely delightful town of Charleston, South Carolina. If you go there, you must stop by Theater 99. Brandi Sullivan and Greg Tavares have created the most creative and friendly and fun community of people there at Theater 99. I can't tell you how much I love those guys. And because I taught storytelling workshops the last time I was down there in January, a lot of those folks who attended the workshops have either gone on to create storytelling shows or participate in storytelling shows. So I'm really hoping that every time we come back, we can keep this storytelling phenomena in Charleston building and growing. And I'd love to do the same in your town. So write to me at kevin@risk-show.com. We're going to start with the lovely Camille Lohman, who can be seen on the TBS series Are We There Yet? And who is a member of the improv troupe Mary Kay Has a Posse right there at Theater 99. Such a treat to have worked with her. And here she is at RISK, live from Charleston. It's Camille Lohman with a story we call The Storm.
Hey, y'all.
Hey.
So the stripper would be arriving at around 8 o'clock. That's right. And for those of you who've ever been a bachelorette or a bridesmaid, you know that the strippers are hot, except when they come to your house. So there were about 6 of us, and we were all acquaintances. We kind of just had the common thread of the bride. And we were going to spend a couple hours together, and then we were going to see a stripper who was going to show up at our house at 8 o'clock. Actually, it was a condo, which made it even better. Who doesn't like strippers and pastels? Right? So we started to get to know each other a little bit more, and we all realized we are all basically from, you know, small southern towns, and we were raised by good families, and we're all pretty proper ladies. Some of them are a little more debutante than others. You know, one girl is like, always crosses her legs at the ankles and never the knees. I'm probably the most wild one as we kind of like start boozing and passing the Evan Williams. And I'm a little bit more open sexually. And I'm not saying that I'm crazy, but I mean, you can't have some of this without some repercussions. So, even as a Southern girl, and I left and lived in Chicago and New York, and where I was living there, I could have had this kind of like cloak of anonymity from the city, and I pretty much could have done anything I wanted. And I had some urges to like, maybe I'll just like check out a sex party. I'll just like watch. I mean, I won't do anything. Or like, maybe I'll have a threesome. Who knows? I'm not gay or straight. Who knows? But I didn't do any of that because something kept kind of reining me back in. I don't know if it was my Southern upbringing. So some of these girls are on the other spectrum. And so we're getting this stripper. And one of the girls who's very debutante, I remember her saying, "Now, do you think he can pull out his real wiener? Like, will he pull out and put on us his real wiener?" And I knew we were in trouble if she couldn't say cock or dick or penis. Like, it was a fifth grade wiener. And she said, "He can't do that. Check the website." So we go onto the website. And there's pretty much no information on the website. There's where the girl has put her credit card number in to reserve a stripper, and it says he'll be at your house. There's literally no other information. It's like skydiving in Guatemala. There's no contracts, no nothing. Just like, jump. But the one thing it did say was that he would arrive with his own music, his own boombox, a costume, and I quote, "a great attitude." So we're all getting excited. We're like tweens at, you know, like getting ready to watch Justin Bieber on TV or something. And all of a sudden there's a knock at the door and we all scream. We're literally like, "Oh, you get it. No, you get it. No, you get it. We'll all get it." So we all get it and go to the door and we open it and there he is. Kevin, our stripper. Now, Kevin is a huge man. I would say he's about 6'5" and just like massive with a shaved bald head. I wouldn't say he's hot or terrible looking. If I were to liken him to a fictitious literary character, I would say Lenny probably from Of Mice and Men. Like, he's attractive enough to like fuck a farm girl who hadn't seen someone she was not related to in a long time. But he also had kind of a slow look in his eye that he could like crush you to death if he hugged you too hard. So he's like, "I just need you to push play on my boombox and tell me where to change." So we let him, you know, we show him upstairs, and at this point I realize I'm not fucked up enough for what is gonna happen. So we pass around more Evan Williams, and he's up there for like 20 minutes, which we don't know what he's doing, but we find out later that before you're gonna strip, guys, you watch porn to get hard. And then you put a cock ring on, so it remains hard. If I'm making anybody uncomfortable, I don't care. And then they put like some potion on it to keep it hard. I don't know, it worked. So he yells down, says he's ready, pushes play, and what comes over his boombox is kind of like a scene from Full Metal Jacket. It's like, you maggots, I'll rip your head off and shit down your neck. And this is my rifle and this is your gun. And then like patriotic music. And we're like, this seems aggressive. I was hoping for LL Cool J or maybe like Motley Crue. I don't know. I'm old school. So down the steps, he like marches in his official military like Marine outfit. And he's like saluting and he's got like four moves. He's like kickball, change, step, like body rub, point. And it's a 60 minute routine. And the first 5 minutes, he's almost completely naked, except for his Snuggie. Now, this is what we've coined it. It is a small little sheath that goes over the penis and that has tassels at the end, which you can loosen to tempt everybody with your penile tip. So he's already got the bride lifting her up, throwing her around, and none of us are sexually excited at this point. I mean, it's a stripper. It's kind of gimmicky. We're just having fun. But then I see him throw the bride up, and he literally throws her around. And we're worried she's going to get decapitated by the ceiling fan. I'm afraid we should take down some seashell pictures. Like, it is getting real in there. And I start to think, I'm kind of a heavy girl, and I bet he's going to pick me up and throw me around. And when you're big boned and dense, and you're a bass, when you're normally a bass on the cheerleading squad, you can start to feel like heavy. So I was starting to get a bit turned on, thinking he's going to throw me around and I'm going to like it. And it was my turn. And before I knew it, he flipped me around and he was fake 69ing me, guys. He was giving me simulated oral sex and I did not hate it. And I'm starting to question my past choices, my current choices, but I'm like not hating it. And there's a whole like five other girls sitting there watching, and I'm like, oh, maybe I am into group sex. I don't know what's happening to me. Hurry, Emily, post. So then he puts me down, and I'm like, whoa, my lines of right and wrong are blurring. And then he goes over to another girl and lays her flat, and he's doing like this sexy worm. Well, he thinks it's sexy. He's doing like this sexy worm, and now his Snuggie's all the way tucked under. He's like literally just giant, hard, pendulum, wrecking ball cock. Just like, and his junk is right by her face. And so she gets like, she's like kind of playfully, like she's kind of like me. She's like, yeah, we'll have fun with it. And she's like, whoa. Goes right in her mouth. She doesn't scream. She doesn't bite down. He doesn't look like, he's like not even fazed by it. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, like maybe this is protocol. I don't know. So he like gets her up, throws her around, goes to the next girl, and she goes into the bathroom, takes the Evan Williams, she's rinsing her mouth out, and I'm like, what happened? And she was like, he put his dick in my mouth and I let him, and I'm like, I know, but why? And she was like, I don't know, it was instinct. Every time there's been a dick by my mouth, I put it in my mouth. Have you ever had a dick by your mouth? And I was like, you know what? I'm not saying I would have done it, but I understand it. Like, every time there has been a dick by my mouth that I can recall, I have put it in my mouth. So I like, okay, well, you know, everything seems okay. Like, okay, she's going back in. Maybe, I think maybe it's Stockholm Syndrome. I don't know. Like, she's back in it. And I'm like, okay, so mouth rape is okay for him, I guess. Although, she didn't say no, but then again, her mouth was full. Hey, yo. So anyway, we go back in, and I'm like, this has got to be it, right? Like, we're on the train to nowhere. And then he turns, and he's like, are you ladies ready for the finale? And I'm like, I don't know. Am I? I don't know. And half of me, the half that is like, honey, pull your jeans up and cool it. And then there's the other half of me is like, I'm fucking ready for it. And before I know it, I have picked up a wad of 20s and I'm fucking making it rain on it. And I'm like, you fucking make America proud and you make the United States Marine Corps proud. And you fucking use our finale. And he's like, all right. So he straddles this chair and he begins slowly, deliberately masturbating. Oh, very slowly. And he's holding eye contact like a little too long, and then he'll give like a wink. And I don't know if it's the special potion that has gotten in his eye from his penis, but we're all in a, we've gotten in this like creepy Girl Scout semicircle, and we're all like. And it's literally like, that's it. And I wonder if his manager was like, okay, Cyclone, that was his name, because he could throw people up. And he did whip us into a sexual storm. So I'm thinking his manager's like, okay, Cyclone, if they go for the mouth, right, then go straight for the awkward jerk off. Go get him, Tiger. And so at this point, we are all like, we've all crossed the line. And then all of a sudden, the debutante gets up and she marches upstairs, and I'm like, finally, someone has drawn the line. We're gonna separate the ladies with class for the sexual beasts that can't get enough. And before another thought could come into my mind, she came down with her camera and started taking close-ups of the masturbating stripper. And she gets about 6 shots in, you know, and he's like, wait a second. You can take pictures, but no social media. I got a kid. And I'm trying to be an accountant. Within the next breath, he's like, oh, I'm gonna come. Drip. I mean, we were ready for like Star Spangled Banner, splooge, and like, we're like, we're gonna miss our flights because we're gonna be cleaning up jizz for days. There's gonna be jizz everywhere. And we were like, if you're like gonna bring it for America, and that's what happened. And so he's like, cleaning himself up and like picking up his 20s and like scurrying around. And I'm like, yeah, you fucking whore, pick your fucking dirty money up, you fucking dirty whore. That's how I felt. So like the lady, the debutante, went, I don't even know if she went to the trip at all because, okay, so then he goes upstairs, he gets like, pulls himself together. The girl who got mouth raped is like outside chain smoking. And then he comes downstairs, and one of the girls who couldn't look at him the whole time is like, so tell me about your son. And then the girl who could barely say wiener is like, she's chewed through like 5 penis straws. And she's like looking at her new photograph album. Oh, Lord. And, you know, after all of this, I definitely don't judge people. As much as I used to. And I think that we all were leveled by this cyclone that came through our lives, because I think a lot of us who maybe felt a little more empowered by our sexuality, and some of us were maybe more shamed by it. I mean, I definitely felt it was odd that I could turn into one of those guys watching. I was basically like watching a girl dance with a cesarean scar at a strip club. That's how I felt, like that dirty, dirty man. But regardless, I'm really glad I weathered the storm. Thank you.
So be a woman, ladies and gentlemen.
Be a woman!
Wow. That was so much fun. Our next storyteller, he's also done the show before. He told me tonight, this is the coolest thing. When he first walked into this theater, it was his birthday, and he fell in love with the place. And then when he fell in love with his girlfriend, he decided to ask her to marry him in this place. And tonight, he's back here in this place, and it is his birthday once again, tonight. So please welcome to the stage Mr. David Appleton.
So I would like to share with you a story. It's a true story that happened to me. It's the last time that I choked a stripper. And I just want to let that sink in. I'm not a habitual stripper choker. I hadn't really choked any before this particular day in question. But here's how it goes. Let's flash back 1998. Wasn't necessarily the best year of my life. Broken up with my fiance, I got fired, I had to move in with my angel of a grandmother named Mamaw. Yeah, that's rough to pick up chicks when you gotta take them back to Mamaw's house. I didn't really like going out because this also, like, I was just in a downtime, so it was kind of this not give a shit time of my life. And I was like, well, you know what? Hey, we're just gonna, whatever happens, happens. Now, this also coincided with the time in your life where you're learning to go out and learn to drink and, like, find your way around. You know, this is all those, there were a lot of firsts just during this time. First, I would go out and you couldn't get anywhere because I was underage. And it's like that when you're 20, turning 21, you're like, let's go here. I can't. What I did find out is since I'm a big guy, I could get into strip clubs underage. I found out they wouldn't ask me a question. I wear a nice watch, just walk right in during happy hour. I'm good to go. And this was fun. Like, I liked going to strip clubs at the time. You know, it's a good way to spend $60. If I had $60 to spend that week, I would go out and I knew for $60, like, I like to have fun, but I also have a responsibility safety switch. Like, if shit starts getting real, it saves me and helps me, you know, keep on the up and up. So $60, I could go to a strip club. I knew I could see some titties, have some attractive women pretend to be interested in me. And maybe, just maybe, if I budgeted just right, I could have one of these attractive women actually come dry hump me for a mere $20. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that works. Like, it was just easier to do that. I didn't have any self-confidence at the time. So going out to a real bar or a club just was not going to work. I wasn't the sex machine that you see before you today. So, like, I would go to the club and I could figure out the strip club. Like, I would, for a while, I would just try to not look stupid. So I'd try to figure everything out beforehand. So when they asked me the questions, I knew the answers. And I would, like, sit over in the corner and, like, just be beautiful minding everything. Like, I'm watching, I'm going, okay, so, like, this triangle here, let's see, I think she's going to do some coke now. And this one's going that way. And It was cool because as I was trying to figure out, like, I knew exactly what to do when I went into the strip club. I walk in, find a spot on the side, not right on the main stage, because you don't want to be always making direct eye contact with the girls, and you don't want to sit off too far in the corner, because then you're the creepy guy in the corner. No one wants to be the creepy guy in the corner. So you find a spot right over here near the main stage. Yes, it's called a main stage. There's also Satellite 1 and Satellite 2. And they're all for you. The best part of any strip club is the DJ. Have you guys heard of strip club DJ? I'm going to go with no. Here's a spot. Normally you walk in and you hear, "Ladies and gentlemen, step right up and tuck a buck. It's your last chance for romance. It's a 2-for-1 special. Get your seat in the erection section. It's right next to the bone zone." Remember, the more you keep tipping, the more they keep stripping. The more the scenery, the more the greenery. These guys are ponytailed magicians with the English language, and they normally have a gold chain too. But just to listen to them go at it is half the reason to go. So let's fast forward. Somewhere towards the end of the last millennia, I am in a strip club in Colombia. It's about 1:30 in the morning. I'm wondering where my buzz went, and I'm like, well, it looks like we're going home to see the only bitch that cares about me, Mamaw. And just about the time I'm ready to get up, this girl plops down, right in my lap, and I'm like, what? You know? And she's like, "Make me laugh." And I was like, I'm... have no jokes and my impressions are horrible. And she's like, "Ah, that's funny." And she was, that's how it sounded, because she was drunk. She not only smelled it, she acted it. And I was like, okay, well, sit down. So for 30 minutes, just mindless banter. And I, you know, it was entertaining for me. She's sitting there. 30 minutes passes. She goes, "I want to dance for you." I was like, okay. You know, and part of me is like, I think you should. That's a good idea. You should dance for me. Part of me's like, make sure you get a 2-for-1 special. You don't want to be wasting too much money at this strip club. So I was like, So I wrote the, you know, I gave her the hard deal face. I was like, you can dance for this. If I get a 2-for-1. You know, I want to make sure it's worth her time. So she's like, yeah, come on, whatever. She takes me back to the couch room, and there's like several sections. There's like the front cushion, there's like the seedy section, and there's the shit you don't talk about section. She took me back there. And I'm like, oh, that's right, oh. She sits me down, and I'm like, all right, here it is, you know? So dance starts, first song, she's dancing, exactly like this. She's dancing, and first song, great. Second song, dancing. I'm thinking, she's going to get probably a 6 to 7 out of a 10 for a couch dance. Like, it's decent, it's spirited, not great, but okay. So at the end of the second song is when something weird happens. Normally when the second song's over, it's like Disney World. The ride is over. She's like, and like, you know, it's like, so the ride's done. She wants to run to the back to wash the smell of my fat off of her. And like, I just want to go home and be ashamed. Like that's normally what happens at that point. I'm like, I should have gotten Chinese food with this. But end of the second song, she keeps going. And I'm like, look, this is on your clock. You know, I am not paying for this. Second song, done. She dances for the third. She dances for the fourth. The fifth. The sixth. I'm like, somebody should report this bitch missing by now. Like, shouldn't she have checked in? Don't they have a clock back there or something? So, the more, like, it's the seventh song, and I'm like, wow. And she looks at me. She looks at me dead in the eye. She grabs me by the shirt and pulls me close. I'm like, ooh, you know, I don't know what to do with this. Like, I don't have this type rating. She goes, I don't know who you are. I don't know what you do. But I want to fuck you. I've never heard some shit like this before. And I'm like the front part of me is reacting. I'm like, okay, the back part is going, what did she say? The front's like, come on, bitch, do this. The back part's like, oh, the stripper wants it. So I'm like, yeah, all right. And I know she wants to fuck me, but I also know I'm not paying for 7 dances because that was on her idea. So I kind of brush it off. We're going, and she's still dancing away. It's like 8 songs. We get to the 9th song. Shit gets real. She leans in real close to my ear. Now, I hadn't noticed because I'm just in this whirlwind of new shit happening and strippers just in my face and wanting to fuck me, and that's weird. So she, like, I didn't notice each time she danced for me, it was getting a little more and more aggressive. Like, she'd pull on a shirt or yank an ear or tell me to steal third, but she's doing all this stuff. And then she leans in real close to this ear and she goes, I want you to choke me. I was like, whoa. I didn't know if she deserved to be choked. I didn't know what she had done wrong. That's like somebody saying, fly the plane. I'm like, I've been to the airport twice. I passed it off. She's dancing some more and she leans in. She says, no, really, choke me. In my mind, I'm thinking, what would this look like? I'm working out. I'm beautiful mind in all the scenarios. Triangles equal bouncers punching me. I'm just like, ow. All I can see in my mind is me being like, I'll just try it. Huh? And then, like, bouncers just being like, on the news. So she leans in. As I'm processing this, she leans in again, and she bites me on the titty, right here. Right here, it's a titty, I'm a man, we can. So she bites my titty, and I was like, ow! And as I pushed her back, I pushed her like right here. I didn't try to, but I got a little, like when you choke, you pull the dog back a little bit. I got that, and then she goes, it was a moan from somewhere in like a deep, messed up childhood. It just came right out. I realized there's an orgasm switch located somewhere near the back of the trachea on this particular model. I never dealt this before. I never driven one of these. It's like you're driving a new car and you're like, whoa, that's a new option. What's this do? So she liked that, and I got that a lot. Like, she really expressed that to me in a clear manner. So I was like, okay, well, she's okay with it. Let's give it a shot. So I'd be like, bouncer check, look left, look right. At first it was like that scene from Full Metal Jacket where Pyle chokes himself. But in this one, Pyle really wanted to be choked. I was just holding my hand, and she was doing that. And then it was like testing a grapefruit or whatever type fruit. I was like, just to see, like, you know, she passed out, it's too much, bring her back. So this goes on for a little while, and she says, we got to get out of here. And again, the front of me is like, yeah. And the back of part's like, what? So she says, I'm going to go get my stuff, and we're going to get out of here. And I was like, you should do that. That's a good idea. Go get that stuff. She walked to the back, and the responsibility is like, pfft, like the flag was up. I was like, holy shit, get out of here. So I ran out of a strip club. Now, you can't quote unquote run out of a strip club. It was like if you're running in an elementary school, like you have to run between the doors. I was like, I had to shuffle more. But I got past there, got out, because you don't want to run past bouncers. They don't like that either. I get outside, and I got in my car and left. And in my mind, I think that like 10 minutes later, she ran out with like her bags, like, where's my choking prince? And that might not have happened, but I do know that was the last time I choked a stripper, and I also did not have to pay for any of those dances. Thanks so much. It's been an honor. Thanks.
So we learned tonight that David has a very vocal front part of him and back part of him. Our next storyteller, I'm so thrilled. He's a New York storyteller, but just happens to be in town. Just chilling out, checking out the festival and having some fun. So it's a thrill to have him here tonight. Please welcome to the stage, Mr. Nathaniel Bates.
So some mornings in second grade, the first thing I would see was my dad's big adult penis. I had a paper route, so I had to get up really early. And 9 times out of 10, I'd be up and out the door before my dad. But, you know, he'd have to come just to make sure that I didn't hit the alarm and oversleep. And I was their firstborn, so they were like aging hippies, and they were just about done being hippies when I was in second grade. So he was still sleeping naked. And the rare mornings I'd oversleep, he'd come into my bedroom and find me there, have to shake me, and I kind of like, ugh. And bam, right at height level, my dad's big adult cock. Now, the shocking part of this was it looked completely different than my own penis. Not only was it big, firm, and like adult, it had this like big red ball at the end, whereas mine looked like just kind of like a droopy elephant trunk. And I didn't know what to make of it. What I do know is my family, even though they had a little hippie phase, my parents will be born and will die WASPs. We do not talk about our emotions. We don't say, I love you. You know, we come from Puritans that liked chairs that had really straight backs. We don't talk about sex. So even though I wanted to ask him, like, why is my penis look different than dad's? I never did. What I did luckily find was, I remember watching sitcoms after school. I particularly remember on watching Small Wonder, The Girl with the Robot. And if you read in lines in sitcoms, they kind of said things they weren't PC allowed to say. But I remember there was an episode where Vicky the robot was wondering why the boy that they live with was like, you know, getting facial hair. And it was because he was changing. His body was changing. And because Vicky was a robot, they'd explained that she wasn't going to do that. But, you know, he was. And I kind of figured out, I was like, a lot of the other sitcoms had that changing plot for these teens that were starting to get awkward. And I was like, ah, that'll be what happens. When I hit a certain age, you know, that ball, like they have the skin and I can roll up and find that little ball that's in there. that'll just like slowly come down when I hit that changing part. Cool, I don't need to bother my parents about it. That was until they enrolled me in swim class. And I remember the first time I was really bad at swimming, so they had to go to the YMCA to learn. And I just remember I was already scared about going to swim. And I walk into the locker room and you hit with a wall of chlorine. And there, as far as the eye could see, were fathers and sons, some getting changed, some all shriveled from being in the pool. And their penises all looked like my dad's. Had this little rubbery ball at the end. And at that point, I was like, wait, I'm not, I am a freak. My dad's the normal one. So I got, the first time I did have to change the locker room, but from that point on, I would put on my bathing suit at home, and then I would just wrap a towel around and go right to my mom's car and never change in the locker room. So none of the kids had to see that my penis was all messed up. And luckily my mom, you know, she was so busy just talking at us constantly about all life's details that like she never noticed that I was back in the back of the car dripping wet. She just didn't notice life's details because she was so busy with them. Now, I would go up in my room sometimes, and I thought maybe I'm supposed to motivate this change. So I would sit in the room, my bedroom sometimes when I was like 8 or 9, and I would just roll the skin back, and the little ball would come out, and I'd be like, great. But then it'd like go, and it'd pop back out. And I'd be like, maybe you just got to keep doing it. Maybe my parents didn't sit me down and tell me this. So I'd spend like a half an hour right before bed just popping it out, or boom, right back. And I was like, God, it's not working. Now, finally, like when I was in like fifth grade, I still didn't know. And I went to, every summer I'd go to summer camp. And I'd always change in the stall in the morning so the kids didn't have to see that. I was like weird and not like them. But in like fifth grade, one or two of the kids had like probably had pubes. And because it's like when bullying is sticking in, they notice I was like changing in the stall. And they come like, hey, I bet Bates doesn't have pubes. And then I was like, no, that's not it. Because like it wasn't it. I did not have pubes. But I was like, oh, if that was the only problem down there, oh, that would be amazing. But I was like, no, you guys don't need to worry about it. But then once you make it a thing, it kind of becomes a thing. So as the week of camp went on, it came more like, oh, you're changing in the stall again. Changing the stall. So like by midweek, I started changing in the bunk room, but I like get really close to the corner and like be like, kind of make a thing like, yeah, guys, I'm just changing with you, but like clearly removed myself as much as I possibly could. And then they kind of kept this buildup in the bunk room. Like, we want to see what's going on. We want to see. Now, for some of the kids, it was bullying. And I do know there was like one or two of the kids who since have come out. So for them, it must have been amazing. It's like, oh my God, these guys want to see a cock and we're allowed to like join in and see another. So for them, it was like the greatest moment. There was a free ticket to want to see a guy's penis. And I remember the last full day at camp, I'm changing the corner and I just feel a hand on my shoulder. And I get spun around and there's all the campers in my bunk and they're kind of looking at me and they look down, they're all ready to laugh. And then they're just as puzzled by my junk as I am. And instead of like getting ready to laugh that there's no hair, which again, there was no hair at the time, they're just, and we drop it. It does not get spoke again the rest of the time at camp. And again, that was church camp. I did not go back after that. My brother and sister kept going and they became counselors there, but that was my end of that camp. Now finally, in seventh grade, you have health class. And everyone's kind of excited for health class because it's the first time you're like allowed to all talk and learn about sex. But then everyone's also kind of nervous because you're going to like see overhead projections of ovaries and really the like not cool part of sex. And everyone's also all hopped up on hormones, so everyone's kind of bipolar seventh grade messes anyway. And I just remember we're one day there, and I'm feeling awkward and half like titillated that I'm there and half awkward. And I'm probably like looking at the girl in front of me, seeing if I can see up like the side arm of her thing and see if she's wearing a bra yet or not. And I'm just half paying attention. And then the teacher is at the overhead projector. He puts the slide on, and there on the screen, there I am. He goes, now this is a slide of an uncircumcised male penis. And I'm like, that's me. I'm uncircumcised. What the hell is that? To myself. And he goes, all men are born this way, but because of disease, tradition from Europe and other religious things, it's pretty common to cut the foreskin off. Only 8% of American males have a penis that actually still has foreskin. It's very common, though, nowadays in Europe. Some people aren't doing it because it might hurt the kids, which fits with my aging parent hippies. Like, you know, they didn't want to hurt the baby. And he goes, there's more nerve endings in there, so their sex is actually better. At that point in my head, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's great. And then he says, also, you got to watch out because they got to clean more in there because some diseases can get in there. And then in my head, I'm like, oh, my parents probably should have told me to clean in there. But I'm feeling good. I'm finally feeling like I know what I am. Until I start walking at the girls' faces, and they're all like, "Yeah, that's weird." And I hear one girl go, "I bet it tastes like pee," and I'm looking around, I'm like, "No, this is." And then we're leaving. I'm starting to feel like maybe this. Now that I know what I am, and I even hear the guys go, "I'm glad mine doesn't look like that. That's really weird." So in like one health class, I like finally knew what I was, and it was a weird pee-tasting European dick guy. And I didn't know what to do. Luckily, I did. Everyone has some level of depression in middle school. And add that to the mix, I kind of decided, took upon myself, how can I keep girls from seeing my penis? Gain 100 pounds. I promise you, if you don't want anyone to see your private parts, gain 100 pounds. It works every time. So most of high school, I didn't have to worry about if a girl was going to try to see it because there was no chance. And it was just kind of there under my, you know, high school fat body. And I do remember, though, like, we got AOL at the time, and I started looking online to, you know, for porn. And if 8% of Americans are uncircumcised, 0.0001% of porn actors are uncircumcised. They all have, like, big, nice, throbbing, veiny cocks. Not like some dangly elephant trunk where semen just drips out of. So, like, I felt dejected. And, like, I started gravitating towards lesbian porn because at least I didn't, like, feel weird about it. And, like, once or twice I tried typing in, like, uncircumcised, but you just get gay sites. It's the only people that are into it. There's no females that have a secret love for it. So I always wondered if my dad saw my search history. And, again, we don't talk about sex, but he's like, why is my 14-year-old son looking at gay uncircumcised porn? But... So one thing led to another. It was time to pick colleges. And I was like on the fence between two. But one was NYU. And I looked there, and they had their own bathrooms. You didn't have to share it with the floor. And if there was a deciding factor, that was it. There was no chance anyone was going to see my junk. And then in NYU, I kind of got into a pseudo-relationship with a girl who was a devout virgin. So, and I was starting to lose weight, but like if you're fat and dating a devout virgin, you can just cut it off. There's no reason that it's not going to get played with. So I was like putting up walls for myself so that no one would have to see it. But then finally, I lost a lot of weight. We had kind of, me and the pseudo-virgin had broken up, and I was still not a pseudo-virgin. I was a full virgin. And I was, you know, drinking with friends and at this girl's apartment. And we're all pretty drunk, and somehow I realized we paired off, and, like, it doesn't really happen to me. I'm 21 at this point, and I'm, like, paired off with this girl, and we're making out, and then my hand's on her boob, and the shirt comes off, and my hand's, like, on her real boob, and then I have, like, my fingers up her skirt, and we're making out, and then she tries to go for my zipper. And you know that thing, like, when you're in a hall, and you both go right, and then you both go left, and you kind of get annoyed where you're blocking each other? I went into that. I was like, she's not getting down there. Like, no, you don't need to do that. I'll go down on you. No, Billy. Finally, she goes, pushes me back, and she goes, what's going on here? Just get the pants off. I kind of stand up. I'm sheepish. I'm like, hey, I don't want to ruin this. I don't know why I'm trying to save it, because the end goal, at some point, these pants have to come off either 2 months from now or 3 months from now. I kind of get up. I take the pants off. I keep my underwear on. I sit back down. She goes, what the hell? Get the underwear off. And I stand up, and I'm like, it's kind of, it's a little weird. And I just drop them, and I'm expecting to look up and just see her repulsed. And instead, she has a puzzled look on her face for about 1 second, reaches up, pushes the skin back just a little, then lets it go. The ball pops right back out. She kind of giggles, and she goes, that's fun. I've never seen one before. And then she puts it in her mouth, and like 2 seconds I came. Thank you.
Yeah.
Nathaniel Bates, everyone! All righty. Our next storyteller told a story for us at our last Risk show here in Charleston, and it was such a joy that I wanted to have her back. She told a story about how she fell on top of and nearly crushed her gynecologist, got his face completely smothered in her boobs. And it was quite a crowd pleaser and a good time. And then she topped it off by singing a Summertime. So you never know what's going to happen when Sean Kennedy comes up on stage. She is a stand-up. You can find her on Twitter at Sean Kennedy, and that's at S-H-O-N Kennedy. And she does stand up at This Is Chucktown right here at Theater 99 as well. So please welcome to the stage the fabulous Sean Kennedy!
Hi, guys. So, I'm driving home for Christmas, and it's about 6:30. I'm on I-95 going home. There's nothing, you know? And I see a dog, and he's looking at me. And I'm looking at him. I don't know where he came from. Then I'm like, this dog is gonna run out in front of my car. And he absolutely did. So he runs out in front of my car. I hear it crinkle, crack, everything. I freak the fuck out. Like, I'm in my car, like, you know? And so then I hear this guy, like, banging on the window, and he's like, are you all right? Are you all right? And I was like, whoa! You know? Like, whatever you think a redneck is, that's what this guy was. Okay? He's got the tattoos, stringy hair, the hat, he had a tooth every now and then. Like, the whole thing. So I was like, yeah, I'm all right. And I was like, you should probably let down the window. So I was like, I killed a dog. And he's like, baby girl, don't you worry about that goddamn dog. That dog committed suicide. I don't know where that fucker even came from. If you had swerved, you would have killed yourself. If you slammed on brakes, you would have killed all of us. You did the right thing. So that made me feel a little better, but not much. It's like, let's check out your car. So we open my hood and it's just spewing everything everywhere. And I'm like, oh my God. And so he's like, I'll follow you to the next exit. You can call somebody, I can pick you up. So it's like, okay. So we go to the next exit. I call my family, you know, they're expecting me. And they all freak the fuck out. You know, my dad calls my brother, calls my uncle, who calls my other uncle, who's kind of sort of a mechanic, and they all come pick me up, you know? It's like, they're like an hour and a half away. So I go back over to this guy, and I'm like, sir, you know, thank you so much. I don't know what I would have done if you hadn't stopped, because I was really just freaking the fuck out, you know? And he's like, baby girl, I ain't going nowhere. He's still crying and shaking like a fucking leaf on a tree. I mean, son of a bitch, if I left you out here by yourself like that on Christmas morning. Plus, I was just sitting here rolling this joint, so I was going to finish that anyway before I left. So I look at this man, and then my exact words were, please, sir, may I have some? And he's like, hell yeah, get on in here. So I'm sitting on the CNT exit off 95 in a 1978 Thunderbird that's gray with burgundy interior with a guy who, if I saw on the street, I'd probably cross the fucking street. He's rolling a joint and I'm about to smoke it. And I'm just like, you know, it's, see what happens, you know? So I get inside, and you know how like the windows used to be black and now they're kind of purplish, whatever? So he finishes the joint and we start smoking, so I'm like, where are you from? You know? So he tells me his life story, and I don't know what he considers a fortune, but he's like, you know, I've had a fortune, I've lost a fortune, now I live in a trailer park, sell a little bit of drugs, just, you know, some black guys in different trailer parks, you know. You know, I really don't trust black people, but you seem kind of cool. And I was like, well, thank you, sir. As a redneck, you are pretty awesome as well. It's like, I got this one friend, one black friend, his name's Tony. I think he's the only black person I've ever let in my house. I don't know him. So he starts telling me, like, all these stories. He's like, yeah, you know, I sell a little weed, and, you know, you can make meth anywhere, and I'll do whatever, like, some cocaine. Not too much here, and just making a living, you know? Just making a living. And my wife, she got in this real bad accident. So she basically has a steel spine, which means like she's always in pain. So she gets 160 Oxycontin a month. Well, she don't take it all because she smokes a lot of weed. So she sells her Oxycontin. That's just to make her some little money on the side. Yeah. So, do you have some drugs in the car? Let's go ahead and get that out the way. Probably should go ahead and tell you that, you know. At that point, I was like, I don't fucking care, you know? I don't. So, we're still smoking, like, I don't know how many joints we smoked. We're like, I'm sharing his Mountain Dew. You know? Like, I probably have hepatitis, you know? Like, I get cotton mouth. I'm like, hey, have some? He's like, sure, oh my God. Yeah. I'm probably gonna drop dead. Anyway. So he starts telling me these stories about, like, how drug deals go bad and, you know, how he's been shot and he's been stabbed and, like, you know, you wait 2 weeks and you're talking to this person to set up a drug deal and you don't know, like, you know, if they're going to kill you or take your drugs or kill you and take your drugs or if they just really want to make a drug deal, you know? And he's like, yeah, and it's like, you know, I spent the night in my car a couple times and... You know, I mean, you know, been in jail, got out of jail, went back to jail, you know. And Tony was apparently one of the guys who helped take care of his wife while he was in jail, the black guy. So that's why I guess he trusted him and let him in his house. But, but he's like, you know, my wife's brother's the big drug dealer. So, I'm listening to all these stories about, like, the police and running and, you know, fleeing and getting shot and stabbed, and I'm like fascinated, and I just started bawling, like I was crying my eyes out, and he's like, what's wrong? And I was like, my life is so fucking boring. No one's ever tried to kill me. No one's ever tried to take my drugs. Like, I did everything right. I went to school. I got good grades. I went to school a fucking again. I got good grades. I went to school a fucking again and got good grades. And then I got a job that I fucking hate. So I got another job that I also fucking hate. So I got another job that I also fucking hate. And I leave the fucking job that I hate. And I go to my one bedroom apartment with no dog, no cat, no house plan. I'm the only fucking thing living in my apartment. Okay? I don't have any boyfriends. I don't have any prospects. I haven't had sex in a year and a half. Do you know how long that is? It's a long fucking time and a lot of fucking batteries, okay? Like, I'm that girl. Like, I'm not gonna go somewhere, you know, for the weekend without some place to stay. You know, like, I don't do that. I did marijuana and, you know, in college, everybody did. But I never do cocaine because, oh my God, it's cocaine. You know, I didn't know why I even fucking call this, like, a life, you know? Like, it's just... It doesn't make any sense. I take care of my parents. I take care of my siblings. I'm a good fucking person. I say please and fucking thank you all the goddamn time, and I fucking hate it. I hate just then. This is a waste of a fucking life. He's like, all right, come on back. Come on back. Come on back. He's like, here, smoke this. And it was something like a skull or something like that. But it made me feel better. So I was like, this was a sign. This was supposed to happen. I was supposed to get in this accident, and I was supposed to meet you. And you know what? From now on, everything in my life is going to be different. If I want to do something, I'm going to fucking do it. If I don't like somebody, I'm like, you know what? I don't fucking like you. If I like somebody, I'm going to be like, you know what? I like you. Why don't you come back to my one-bedroom apartment where I'm the only thing living? Let's hang out for a little bit, you know? I'm like, if I want to go somewhere, I'm going to go. You know, I'm going to take chances, because what's the worst thing that could happen? I could die. That's going to fucking happen anyway. I could go to jail. You've been to jail. Seems like you're doing all right. You know? I mean, what's the big fucking deal? You know? So my brother calls, and he's like 10 minutes away. And so the guy leaves, and he gives me a gigantic bag of weed. Like, a gigantic bag of weed and a handful of OxyContin, because he said I was going to be sore the next day. You know, and he was right, absolutely. So my brother gets here, and I'm just like telling him, I was like, oh my God, I just met this guy and he was so cool. He's kind of sort of redneck and his wife has steel fucking spine. But you know what? I'm going to live the rest of my life and I'm going to do what I want to do. If I don't like this man, be like, fuck you, you know what? And I just think it was meant to be that I got in this accident. That could have been Jesus. You don't know. Okay? You don't know. So, meanwhile, I have no proof that this man ever existed, other than weed and OxyContin, which I could have gotten from anywhere. So, to this day, I don't know if my brother thinks I'm absolutely fucking insane, but it turned out to be a pretty good day. So, there you go.
That's all for this episode, folks. This is Nona Phoenix behind me now. The links to the websites for the storytellers and the musicians are at risk-show.com/listen. Remember, if you pass through Charleston, you gotta go to www.theater99.com. That's theater with an R-E at the end. Check out all the wonderful stuff they're doing there. If you live in Charleston, keep following us because we plan on being back hopefully in January. Remember, anyone can take coaching sessions with me online through thestorystudio.org. I can help teach you how to create your own storytelling show. I can coach you on shaping and deepening your own storytelling. And we have a ton of other educational opportunities there too. Video lecture series, corporate training. That's thestorystudio.org. Meanwhile, Risk has a bunch of wonderful live shows coming up in New York, Los Angeles, and Washington, D.C. On June 27th, we're at The Pit in New York City with Vic Henley, Harrison Greenbaum, and Neil Brennan. Neil is the co-creator of Chappelle's Show, if you didn't know. On that same night, June 27th at Nerd Melt in Los Angeles, we have Moshe Kasher, Mather Zickel. I think we're going to have Joe Latrullio and Baron Vaughn. Then on June 29th in D.C., big, big show that we're doing with Speakeasy D.C. at the, I keep forgetting the name of this theater, the Town Dance Boutique. I've been working on those stories with those storytellers. I can tell you that is going to be an emotional roller coaster ride. Big, big laughs, big, big tears. As you know, we are always searching for emotionally loaded, revealing stories. If you have one, or if you know someone who does, check out the submissions page at risk-show.com, or just write to me directly at kevin@risk-show.com. Stories about murder, addiction, profound instances of love and forgiveness, incarceration, surviving disasters, heinous crimes, outrageous fortune, war stories, suicidal situations, breaking taboos, dealing with grief. Don't be shy. Reach out to us at kevin@risk-show.com. Remember, we are looking for a business director for Risk and the Story Studio, a business whiz with a real entrepreneurial savvy. Write to kevin@risk-show.com. Other than that, folks, today's the day. Take a risk.
He put his dick in my mouth and I let him, and I'm like, I know, but why? And she was like, I don't know, it was instinct. Every time there's been a dick by my mouth, I put it in my mouth.
Sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows, everything that's wonderful is what I...